Breaking It Down with Frank McKay. This is 103.9 LI News Radio.
I'd like to welcome everyone to Breaking It Down. Frank McKay here. So much more importantly, a wonderful actor and voice actor. Everyone forgets the amazing radio career this man has had and still has. I mean, he's just he's a legend in radio, but he voices some of the greatest shows, from Rick and Morty to F is for Family, which is a dynamite show, and that's with Bill Burr and whatever. He's a wonderful actor. Thrilled to have Phil Hendry with us. And Phil, how are you?
I'm good, Frank. Thanks for inviting me on. I appreciate it.
Yeah, well, listen, thrilled to have you. You know, I didn't mention King of the Hill. I mean, that was another huge one. When did you start thinking voice acting? I mean, was it just a natural progression from where your radio show was, or what was the first thing you got into as far as voice acting went?
Well, it was actually a function of just being on the radio. You know, I'd been on radio for a lot of years, and then I got into talk radio, which is where I really started. When I got into talk radio, that's where I started doing character voices. So I started doing character voices on my show as just a sort of a outgrowth of who I was and what I was doing artistically. But then when I got to Los Angeles in 96, you know, this town has production houses and network shows, etc. So that's when I started getting phone calls from the guys at King of the Hill, Scott Mueller and Futurama and shows like that. And I'm not one to turn a paycheck down.
Yeah,
I said, sure, you know, let's rock and roll with that. I went to a table read for The Simpsons. It was fantastic. It was cool to meet all those people. I was like starstruck. And then I got hired by a great guy, Mike Judge, over at King of the Hill, to come over and do some, episodic, what do they call it, recurring stuff on that show. And that's kind of where it started.
Yeah, Mike Judge, also from Beavis and Butthead fame.
Yeah.
I think he started on that. And then, wow, I mean, he's really...
He's a genius, man. That dude's a genius, man. Everything he thinks of is like a hit. He's got that one now. What's the one on TV? Silicon Valley.
Yeah, Mike Judge is an amazing guy. And he's the type of guy that can go into a store and just have a normal life. And I imagine you can, you can too, right? I mean, you know, people recognize you, but you, because so much of your work is your voice... You probably get away with having a normal life.
Oh yeah, no, I'm not anybody recognizes. Every now and again, and I mean every now and again, somebody will say, "Hey, are you Phil Hendry? I thought I recognized your voice." That will be what they say, and they have to be stone fans of radio, you know, to do that, man. So
yeah,
no, it's cool. I mean, I prefer that, to be honest with you. I really do, because all I want to do is work, have fun doing work, and, you know, go home and, you know, do what I'm doing right now, talking to you and having a cup of coffee and looking at my cat.
Yeah. Listen, whatever you've done and whatever you're doing, just keep doing it. You know, boy, not a lot of people put together a career like this. And by the way, it's a unique career. It's not, it's, you know, most guys die in radio. You know, they go on radio and they're there from the beginning to the end. Or they're a DJ. I mean, did you ever consider yourself a DJ or more of a radio personality?
I got into radio, Frank, because I wanted to be a DJ. I was so in love with the jazz jocks that I grew up listening to on KBCA here in Los Angeles, and the really cool FM jocks that we had in those days that picked their own music and picked their own sets and created a mood. And I thought those cats were the coolest people I ever heard in my life. I mean, that's what I heard when I was a little 5-year-old kid listening to the radio, going back to Canada with my parents to visit my grandparents. That's what I wanted to be. And then when I got into radio in 73, all of that had left. Now everything was a playlist. Now everything was computer generated, and you had to play the playlist that the program director and the music director told you to play. So rapidly, inside of, you know, 7 or 8 years, you're really getting tired and bored, but you're also having to make your way getting jobs. And I guess I wasn't really ready to become a fully exploding radio personality with the jokes and the voices. I like I said, I always saw myself as more of a presenter. And so it took me a long time as a disc jockey to finally decide, because it got more oppressive, man. You know, you're just playing the songs and you're having to be enthusiastic about music that you played 800 times a day, and you're starting to hate the music you're playing. And, you know, you're starting to look for a way out. What do I do? And along came Rush Limbaugh in 88, who not only reintroduced talk radio, but he brought personality to it. Yeah. He brought humor to it. He brought a shtick to it. I thought that there was an opening there. And that's when I got out and shifted over to talk radio. So it was about 16, 17 years of being a disc jockey and sort of, you know, feeling muzzled, you know.
Yeah. Listen, let me remind folks of who they're listening to. You're listening to a man who's just having an incredible career. Everything's just kind of in a, and to me anyway, the way I look at it, it's just a one big progression. And he really is had a unique career. Phil Hendry is our very special guest. If you're just tuning in or if you're just turning on your radio a little late, Frank McKay here with Phil Hendry. And again, I started mentioning the shows that you do voices for. And mm-hmm. a lot of them are very hip shows, you know, very cool shows. You know, like Rick and Morty. I mean, the cult following around that. F is for Family, to me, is just one of the great shows out, the great new shows. I don't care, animated, you know, live action, yeah. Whatever. I love the show. I just, they can't come fast enough for me. I enjoy it. I know it's different.
Did you grow up in the 70s?
I was born in 67. So,
oh, yeah, dude. So you were a little kid in the 70s, yeah.
Yeah, so I know what it's like, yeah. I mean, it's very much like that. It's so funny. And it's subtly funny, you know, just the way they go about it. Whose baby is that? I mean, is that Bill Burr's baby?
That's Bill Burr's life. Bill had great success as a stand-up, and, you know, what happens is you get a level of success, and people start to ask about you, and I'm sure that he had an idea or somebody had an idea, but Mike Price is what we call the showrunner, one of the executive producers. And Mike worked for The Simpsons and still does. Mike just won an Emmy, in fact, for The Simpsons. He's a terrific, terrific guy. And he got together with Bill, along with some of the other cats, Peter Billingsley. And they said, well, let's do this animated show. And I'm sure Bill, most of this is Bill's idea. It's his conception. And it's a beautiful show because it mines an area of life that we've really seen done successfully. And that's the 1970s. You were a kid. I was an adult. That's worse, being an adult in the 70s, because the music sort of sucked, and yet it was okay. And the mores, the morals of the time were very fuzzy. I feel sorry for any kid that grew up in the 70s, to be honest with you. People are out of control. They say that, Frank, America had a garrison mentality from World War I forward all through the 20th century. And we finally realized with the Vietnam War, we didn't have to be on guard anymore. We were the baddest ass cats on the block. Who are we afraid of? And the 70s was the party that we threw for ourselves. and it wasn't necessarily a good one, you know. So Bill, that's Bill's world. And that's that. I think they brought it to the like you say, they brought it to television really well, man. It's very funny.
It's funny. I mean, it's yeah. good, and it's right on all of the things. You know, they have like the people smoking in the car and all the political incorrectness. You know, the slapping the kids, the punching the kid, right. Like lining up for that. And it's not mean. There's nothing. It's not brutal. It's just the way it was. I mean, that's exactly the way it was. Yeah. That's how my father was. I mean, he was. I wish my father was that cool. In fact, you know.
yeah, it's really awesome the way they. Hey, you know what? And yet there was love, just like you said. You know, your old man threatened to throw you through a wall, but you know, he never really did throw you through a wall.
No,
he was
right.
Threatened to throw you through a wall. And it was kind of like Jackie Gleason on The Honeymooners, always threatening to, you know, belt Alice to the moon, but he never really does because he's actually really afraid of her, and he would never do it a million years. The other thing that should be mentioned, Frank, is the actors on that show. I mean, we got Mo Collins, who was on Mad TV, and she's on Fear the Walking Dead. She does a multitude of voices. Debbie Derryberry, who's one of the all-time great voice artists in Los Angeles.
Yeah.
All kinds of people, you know. Laura Dern is on the show and people like that, but the supporting people are really brilliant, man. And
You know, I've had Debbie on the show numerous times. She's just so, she's such a talented actress.
She's the best, yeah.
It's just unbelievable. And I love talking to folks that, you know, kind of have to grind out a career, even though, you know, she's had great success and everything else. But, you know, it's one thing to talk to the one guy that, or the one gal who had the one big role early on in their career, and they just kind of threw roller skates on the rest of the way and cruised through it. But it's mm-hmm. different to talk to the men and women that really have to, you know, earn a living as actors and actresses. And you look at their IMDb's and they're loaded with great shows. By the way, you're one of them. The one thing missing from the IMDb is all of the radio that you did so brilliantly in the past. And it's an amazing career that you've pieced together. Very unique career. And again, if you're just joining us, the voice you're hearing other than mine is Phil Hendry, and he's just a wonderful actor, voice actor, radio personality, and a syndicated radio talk show host and a DJ for 17 years prior to that. I think that, you know, if I'm misremembering, he'll forgive me, but I know there was an original Canadian tie, whether he was born in Canada and ended up in California. And then there was a long, and if I'm mixing this up, then forgive me, but there was a long long car trip to go visit. And I think it was you who said that. I just listened to the radio the whole time.
Yeah, that was the trip we took to Canada. Yeah, my parents came to California in 1949 from Toronto, Canada. They'd already had two children. My older brother, Darryl, was born in 43. My father was in the Canadian Army in World War II. So he was in Italy and then back to England he went. And then he came back to Canada. And my sister, Joanne, was born 3 years after that in 48. And my old man got a job with National Cash Register Company, which for the young people listening, that used to be the thing, business machines before we had computers and NCR. So he gets transferred to L.A., and I was born in 40, and excuse me, I was born in 52, and my younger sister Marianne was born in 53, and that's we were the native born Americans, but everybody eventually became American. And my mother, in fact, a funny story, I remember my mom coming back from the swearing in when she became a U.S. citizen, and she says to me, "I became a citizen today." And I said, "Of America?" She says, "Yes." I said, "Wow." And then the topic got to President Eisenhower. I said, "Well, where's he from?" She said, "He's from Texas." And I said, "I thought you said the president had to be from America." So that always, seriously, I was like 3 years old. I said that gets a laugh. But then, I was a little kid, man, 57, 58, 59, maybe a first grader. We all piled into the two-tone 56 Mercury and drove back to Toronto to visit the grandparents. So now there's my mom and dad going back to Canada with four kids. And we drove across country, and that's where I got turned onto the radio big time. I would stay up all night. My father's driving, everybody else is asleep in the car. If you can imagine four kids and two adults in a Mercury, you know, but they made it work, man. I remember us having a blast, you know. But I listened to these radio stations fading in and fading out, and the disc jockey talking about where he was and the weather and what's going on in their city. And these voices were so great. They were great voices. It was very mysterious. It seemed to me that these guys had control of life, that these guys were in control of the world, and they were your guide through the night. And I just loved it. And I decided at some point, that's what I wanted to do. You know, my brother wanted to go into acting, and I thought acting was for dorks. I just thought that was like the lamest gig you could have, you know. I thought the coolest job in the world was to be on the radio. So that's kind of that, right? That's where it started.
Yeah, just unbelievable. By the way, worth mentioning, we kind of blew past Peter Billingsley real quick. I think he was the kid in the Christmas. What was it?
He sure was.
A Christmas Story, right?
Yes, he was. And he sure was.
And he went on to have a really wonderful career as a producer, and he wrote and he directed and all kinds of things behind the camera. And I'd be remiss if we didn't mention that real quick. Yeah. He's part of that F is for Family crew, which is just loaded with talent.
Yeah, the Brain Trust. Yeah, we just I was just at the Television Academy. They had a screening of F is for Family, because they do them for the Emmys. And Peter was up there along with Bill, along with Mike Price, Brian, a bunch of the guys, Brian Cowan, and, you know, holding forth about how the show was created. But yeah, Peter's a terrific guy. And I had no idea he was a kid actor until somehow someone might have mentioned it to me, not more than maybe 8 or 9 months ago. And then I put it all together.
Yeah, a lot of, you know, collective wisdom there and collective experience that you could just pick up along the way. And then, you know, for them to have, casted you in there is just, it just shows the hipness of that crew. It really is. I mean, Laura Dern, you know, mixing with Debbie Derenberry and Derenberry and Bill Burr. I mean, Phil Hendry, who is our guest, if you're just joining us. You draw a lot of talent in one place. And if you have good writing, good talent there, well, you're going to have a hit on your hands. And I don't know where it ends up, but boy, I hope that's a 10 season, 20 season show because it's terrific.
You and me, man. I like that too, you know. But I think we're going to do another season here. I just went in and did some what we call ADR looping. You know, you plug in lines. It seems to be doing really good, and it does have a really loyal fan base, and that's always important. But, you know, when you talk about grinding it out, that's what you do, man. It's one show goes down, you look for another gig, you know, and that you kind of bounce between jobs that way. But, you know, if you know what you're doing, it's a good life, and I don't mind it. So I prefer it, man. In fact, I never thought that I'd say that, but I do. I prefer doing this kind of work rather than sort of the daily grind of doing a radio show, which got to be, I put so much pressure on myself when I was doing radio. Having to come up with a perfect show every day was driving me nuts. So,
yeah, how many hours? And before you respond to that, let me remind everyone, Phil Hendry, again, is our very special guest, Frank McKay, here with Phil, wonderful actor, voice actor, radio personality, longtime DJ and show host. How many hours was your show? It was like 3 or 4 hours a day.
It was three. Optimally, it got to the optimum length of 3 hours in Los Angeles. Eventually, I was doing 4 in Miami. I did as many as 5-6 hours in Minneapolis, where they almost like worked me to death. And then I did 4 hours in Atlanta. So it was, when you're doing character voices and you're doing your own voice and you're facilitating that, and then you're taking calls from people who want to talk to the fake voice because they don't know it's fake. They think it's a real guy. And so that takes a lot of writing, and it doesn't take so much a lot of writing. It takes a lot of good instinct as to what is going to be a good gut issue on any given day. Then you go in, your 3 hours is tops. And I would even say 2 hours would be perfect. But because you're coming into a traditional realm, the traditional realm of radio, where everybody does a 3 or 4 hour shift, why should you be any different, Hendry? So that's what you got to do. And I tried to put in an hour there where it was just me talking, and I was really uncomfortable doing that. I don't know why that was, but I could not monologue to save my rear end. So I, you know, wound up just doing goofy voices for 4 hours.
Listen, it's one of those things that works, and you know, now you're into this. You're kind of writing your own ticket though, which is the American dream if you think about it. I mean, it's one thing to. And a lot of people forget. I mean, you're the son of immigrants, and doesn't sound like you were born with a silver spoon in your mouth either. And you know, your dad was a working guy. You know, NCR is a big deal. When I was growing up, it was a big, you know, like Xerox or IBM or whatever. NCR was a major employer in the United States, and I guess throughout. But it's one thing. Again, to be born into this the business, and again, you and I both have friends that, they're third generation and fourth generation, and we're not disparaging anything that they're doing, but you know, you have to kind of improvise your whole career throughout, and you really did an amazing job. Weren't you on 100 stations at one point?
Yeah, we had about 120. I think we had about 140 stations at our highest point, Frank. You know, and we were on in most of the top 10 markets. I say most of the top 10 markets. We never did quite crack New York. But I believe we were on in Chicago and Philly at one time, LA, San Francisco. And that was good because, again, the show that I did was a highly stylized satire of talk radio. And so it was, in a lot of ways, it was like selling tie-dye T-shirts in an auto sales room. You know, people walk in and say, "Hey, that dude's got really good tie-dye T-shirts," but I actually came in here to buy a car. You know, I always felt it would be better. I thought Cox should have done this. Clear Channel should have done this, where they came up with another format. You have talk radio and you have music, and I think they should have come up with something called personality talk radio, which would have been basically comedy, and the hosts such as myself, I mean, Bubba the Love Sponge. I used to know guys, Freddie Mertz, you know, Howard Stern, people who did essentially an entertainment show, not a political talk show, that they should have had a separate format for us. So I think they missed an opportunity there. But hey.
Again, let me remind folks that walked away. Let me remind them that you're listening to Breaking It Down. Frank McKay here. Much more importantly, actor, voice actor, radio personality, and just somebody who has put together a very unique and incredible career. Still going strong. You know his work from everything from Rick and Morty to King of the Hill. And, you know, you got a Simpsons in there, right? Napoleon Dynamite, the TV series.
Yes.
Which was good. Squid Bellies, you had a one-off on that, I see. Futurama, you had some Futurama.
Yeah, Futurama. We did a Futurama movie. There was a Futurama movie. I'm not sure what it was called, but I did Waterfall. The characters I did were the three generations of Waterfall guys. There was the grandfather and the son and, you know, sort of a hippie dude, yeah.
Yeah, that was cool. Yeah, you got Billy West over there. He's another guy who's he's a guy who could have a normal life, but boy, I challenge anybody to not have heard his work, you know, or seen.
He's
his
everywhere,
work.
Man. Yeah.
Everywhere.
Yeah, everywhere. He's great. He's fantastic. I mean, you know, Maurice LaMarche. I mean, that guy. Oh. You may not know the name, but that cat's done everything, man. And in fact, I was in that movie with Maurice and a bunch of other people called Team America. Which was done by the guys from South Park, World
yep.
Police, Team America, World Police. And I watched those guys work in that flick. And Darren Norris, I mean, God, he played, I don't know if you know the movie Team America, but
yeah, I do. That's Trey Parker and Matt Stone.
Darren played Spotswood, the guy who had the voice like this. Well, I'll tell you, Billy. I mean, just a great guy.
Yeah,
funny guy.
When did you start doing voices in general? Did you when you're listening to, you know, the radio, your dad's driving, you know, that long trip to Canada, what sounds like a pivot mm-hmm. point, right? You know, it's like a pivot point for you, at least recognizing radio. And so you're doing this and you're hearing the different voices. At what point mm-hmm. are you experimenting? And, you know, in your room, maybe in a tape recorder, cassette player?
I think it happens right away. Long before you get a tape recorder, you're just doing it. I think it's just an instinct. I think it was for me. I remember going to a movie. In fact, to this day, I don't know why I identify with James Mason. I remember going to a movie with my parents called 55 Days at Peking. And I thought James Mason was in it because he played a Chinaman, you know. If you know James Mason,
yeah,
he has this voice. He was in North by Northwest, you know, with Cary Grant. But he played a Chinaman. I thought, I came home all like 10 years old doing James Mason impressions. And did anybody tell me to do that? No. Did anybody? It was fascinating to me. So I began to mimic people, not to be a smartass, not to be anything other than, wow, that person's got an interesting, or they have an interesting personality. You know, I'd like to be that guy and see what he sounds like this way or that way. That's what happens. And then when I was around 12 years old, I saved up my nickels and my dimes and rode my bike up to this, you know, warehouse sales place in Pasadena. And I bought a little reel to reel. It couldn't have been more than these little tiny reels, man, like 3-inch reels, it looked like, or 5-inch reels. And that was my first tape recorder. I had a ball with that thing, man, recording stuff, listening back. So it kind of starts like that, but I think it's instinctive. If you've got a kid at home and he's going around making all these really cool voices, this is a kid that, you know, is going to be either an actor or a voice actor at some point if you let him do his thing. So
yeah, well, that's the thing, is you kind of let him do his thing. I've had Wally Wingert on a couple of times, and he's another great voice actor. And I think he was saying, you know, he was like giving the young guys out there, you know, that are thinking about going into voice acting, some advice, and I think it was him who said, you know, you should have five or six voices. You know, you should have five or six different type of voices.
That probably I would say that's instinctive, though. I think that's instinctive, Frank. You know, I don't think you do voices and you only have one. You know, hey, listen to me do my, you know, Donald Trump voice again. Right. I mean, okay, that's great, Bob. What else do you do? Yeah, you know, I think it's natural to, if you do voices to. So he's right about that, but I think what he's saying is that's kind of the natural flow of the work. If you're out there listening and you only have one character voice, what he's basically saying is you're really not doing the work. You know, see if there's anything else that you've got inside of you that you want to do. See if there's anything else that's interesting to you, because a producer is going to want to hear that. You know. And they want to know how well you could handle a script and how well you can do different characters. But if you're just a guy who does this really funny impression that everybody likes to hear at the barbecue, and you think, well, wow, I could go into voice acting, I would say keep exploring and don't give up until you've got two or three or four more voices. And if you don't, then you don't. And it's really probably not a business you should go into.
Yeah. You know, we're talking to a whole bunch of people in Florida, maybe eight different stations. We'll be listening as we're talking here. And I remember spending a lot of time in Florida when I was a kid. I'm from New York, but we ended up in and around the Orlando area. And sure. I was always under the impression that was a home base for you. And, that Florida was. If so, how did you end up there?
Oh, well, it's a good question, man. I grew up in Arcadia, California, Pasadena, California. I went to LaSalle High School, and then I went to Arcadia High School. And one of my very good friends was a kid named Rob Fison, and his father had a concrete construction company here in California. Well, on about our senior year in high school, their family, the Fison family, decides to move to Florida because guess what's happening? They're building Disney World. So there's a lot of construction work happening, and there's a lot of companies going down there and looking to cash in. And that's exactly what the Fison family did. And of course, you stay in touch with your friends. And he says to us, meaning me and a group of us, why don't you guys come down here and work for the summer? My old man's hiring. And I thought, you know, it doesn't matter where you come from. You want to get the hell out of there by the time you turn 18. I don't care if you're from New York. You want to get the hell out of New York. That's the greatest city in the world. You want to get the hell out of there, at least for a couple of years, you know, and see what else is out there. So I said, that sounded pretty good to me. So that's what we did around 72. We got in the car and a bunch of us drove south to Florida and landed there in Orlando and went to work in the construction field, thinking I was only going to be there for a summer. And all the other guys left, and I stayed for whatever reason and continued working, because I guess I just didn't really see anything to come back to in California at that time. And I kept working in construction until one of the guys, his cousin, was a disc jockey at WLOF. Yeah, WLOF in Orlando. Bill Barber was his name. And Todd says to me, why don't you talk to my cousin Bill? He'll tell you all about it. And so I talked to this guy, and Bill says to me, well, make a tape. What should I make the tape of? Just commercials, reading commercials, doing some news. And I did that. And with the help of some, I don't know what it was now, man. It was like a what do they call those? An extension school, like one of those broadcasting schools they advertised on TV.
Yeah, like the Columbia Broadcasting.
That's it, man. I enrolled in that just long enough to make a connection with a guy who got me to get my tapes out. And I sent my tapes around, and I actually got hired with no experience at a little suburban station in Orlando in 1973. So that's what started it. And I was nervous, man. I was nervous as hell when I went on the air down there, but that's how it happened, man. That's how I wound up in Florida and in Orlando. And I wound up working for, I say, three or four stations in Orlando before I split and went to my first, you know, big market gig was in New Orleans.
Wow. Yeah. Just what a career. Phil Hendry is the voice that you're hearing, and I'm thrilled to have him. And we got a couple moments more with Phil, wonderful actor, voice actor, and somebody who's just carved out a career, did it his way. You know, they'll be singing that 100 years from now, hopefully, when Phil goes, that they'll be playing that in the background, My Way, because he really has done it with no real script. I mean, it sounds, you know, no pun intended, because I obviously you're doing a lot of writing and script, but I'm talking about the construction of your career is really wonderfully done. And it seems like it was improv.
Well, when you, yeah, but you see, when you do it your way, you're doing it your way because the world is kind of pushing you in certain directions, you know. So it's not really just, you know, I don't think anybody really, I'm going to go here, I'm going to go here, I'm going to go here, and I'm going to go here, and then I'll be a success. I don't think it really happens. What you do, though, is you say, I know what I want to do. And you just get better at doing it, man. And you get better at facilitating your way. You get better at your relations with people. You get better, you know, you don't burn any bridges anymore. You know, you start making friends. But all of that is to help you go where you want to go, you know. So if you can call that doing it your way, I say any successful person does that, you know. You just learn as you go. But, I got fired from a lot of gigs, Frank, you know.
That's part of the thing, yeah, yeah, you know, yeah. Getting canceled and fired, yeah, and everything. But let me ask you this, and you may have already touched on it. Or mention the name in there, but who was the first person that you met that did what you ended up doing for a living, and they were making a living with it? In other words, who was the first professional, whether DJ or radio personality, or for that matter, actor? Who was the first person that you came across that was actually doing what you wanted to do for a living?
Well, I mean, I used to ride my bike over to KRLA, which was in the old Huntington Sheraton Hotel in Pasadena. Now it's called the Langham. It was a Ritz-Carlton for a while, because KRLA Radio here in Los Angeles, which was one of the big top 40 stations, was located there. So the first guy I met doing what I wanted to do was Johnny Hayes, one of the disc jockeys at KRLA. And then I met Bob Eubanks, who everybody knows him from the Rose Parade and all that stuff.
Newlywed.
Yeah. He was doing nights. I met him, and then I met Casey Kasem, who was doing noon to three. Excuse me. And then I was fortunate enough to meet Casey later on in my career and worked with him at Westwood One. But those are the first guys I met. But the first guy that kind of was familiar, came from my circle of friends, was this guy, Bill Barber, in Orlando. He was the brother-in-law of my friend Todd, and he was a disc jockey. And I looked at him going, wow, you know, you've got a cool gig. You did afternoon drive at WLOF. He says, yeah, you guys work in construction, don't you? I go, yeah. It must be really nice looking at the sun coming up as you're driving to work in the morning. I go, no, man, it's not nice. I got the sun burning into my eyeballs at 6 a.m. No, it's not. You know, I'm not having a good time doing that. But Bill was the first guy to that. And you know, again, I knew about his life, his wife, his kid, and how his life rolled out. And, you know, he was doing good. And that's what I wanted to do. You know, that's how I want to do it, you know.
This might be a strange example, but I remember listening to an interview with O.J. Simpson, and this is prior to him murdering, right? You're murdering two people.
Yeah.
But I was listening to this interview, and he said that, you know, he grew up in the Oakland, San Francisco area, right? And one day his uncle brings home Willie Mays. And I mean,
wow.
Yeah, I mean, Willie Mays is the god of athletics in San Francisco at that time period. And O.J. was in high school, and he, you know, by the way, I mean, how nice is that? Your uncle just brings by Willie Mays. I mean, it's like, you know, it's a nice
thing.
It's
insane. But it's like bringing by Mickey Mantle or something.
Yeah, exactly, right? So yeah. He basically said, I mean, well, I'm paraphrasing, but O.J. said, look, when he brought him by, I'm thinking, you know, I'm about the same size as him. He said, I could run as fast as him. He's African-American like I'm African-American. Mm-hmm. Hey, if this guy can do it, you know, I can do it. This guy's flesh and blood and whatever. Yeah. And I think there's something to be said from that. It's like Bill Clinton meeting Kennedy, you know, and thinking in his mind, hey, I can do this and whatever. But I think there's some truth there. I mean, you just mentioned all those legendary guys, Bob Eubanks and Casey Kasem and the other guy you mentioned that, you know, to you knew his whole life story, and we might not know him here, but is there a sense of that? And it probably would have been so subtle in your you know, upbringing, you know, or your personal growth that maybe you didn't notice it, but do you think there's some of that there? You met these guys, they were flesh and blood. If they can do it, I can do it. In the back of your mind, subconsciously, you're picking up on that?
Well, I think that happened gradually for me, Frank. I don't remember ever meeting anybody when I was right out of the box, you know, before my career started. To be honest with you, I don't. I'm not saying that that's, you know, I'm, you know, envious of guys that were able to find mentors like that. You know, I didn't have a mentor. You know, and it's a tricky thing comparing yourself to other people, but I can say that getting into acting from the radio world, as much as I have to still learn, I do see people and I watch them work and I think, well, you know, look, I know I've got the basic skill. I know I'm as good as, at least in terms of understanding the character and this and that, as the rest of these guys. So yeah, sure, I can do this. So there's, you're looking for ways to give yourself confidence, because it's a real competitive thing. And so you look anywhere you can to find that confidence.
Phil Hendry, once again, is our very special guest, a wonderful actor, voice actor, radio personality, longtime DJ, and was once on 140 stations, which is just, it's an unbelievable number. And right. I don't know that New York was one of your markets. Florida.
But I tell you what, there was a time I never thought I'd be on 140 stations. I didn't even know that such a thing existed. I thought I'd be on one radio station. I'd be the happiest guy in the world. But so that was cool. Yeah.
Well, how did that happen? I mean, you ran into somebody and they kind of ran you into a syndicator. What were you Were you kind of self syndicating before that?
What happened, Frank, was. I was a disc jockey and I got fired for the last time. And I realized that I needed to do something. I knew I had talent, you know, and I knew that I was not maximizing it. I knew that there was more to do and I knew what I had to do. And that was to give vent and give voice to these instincts that I had, which was to create the sort of theatrical stylized type of talk radio. I wasn't thinking of it that way. I was thinking of, you know, talk radio to me was so boring that I wanted to make fun of it. That's basically what I did, you know? So I made these tapes and I felt so free when I started doing the work that I do now and leaving the disc jockey part of my career. I felt so absolutely liberated that I had enormous confidence. And my very first job was at KVEN. My first talk show was up here at KVEN Ventura, a little tiny beach community here in California. And even though it was this little dinky station I went to work at every day, to me, I might as well have been going to work at WABC or something, man. It was like, that was how great I felt and how great I felt doing the work. And I thought, because people were being syndicated, this was 1990, so I knew the Rush was up on the Bird. I knew there were a lot of guys who were going up on the Bird, the satellite. Mutual was still doing its thing. And I thought, as confident as I felt, that it would be 2 years and I'd be syndicated, okay? That's how confident I was feeling and how good I was feeling about the work I was doing. It took me actually 9 years from the time I started at KVN to the time that, but it was always my goal. And by 1996, when I was in Miami, I met David Katz, who worked for Don Buchwald, who represents Howard Stern. That's right. And David, I told him what I wanted to do, and that's what he wanted me to do. It's because if you're an agent, you want to make money. So, from the time I came to LA in 96, it was 3 more years, and we finally got a deal with Premier Radio. Mm. But to be honest with you, Frank, and I don't mean this to sound egotistical, but it was where I knew I belonged. It was where I knew that I was destined to be, because I knew that what we were doing was a lot of fun, you know, and people needed to hear it.
Do you remember the first time someone recognized you for what you were doing and really like a stranger, not a friend, not a not a family member, but somebody off the street, you know, it came up to you and started, you know, because you had all these different personalities and all these different characters. When people started really asking you about and you really, you know, like Stern, for example, right? People come up to him and they know, you know, Baba Booey and they know Jackie and, well, you know, Jackie's not there anymore, but, you know, Fred and all these different guys. You know, when people start knowing the characters around you, actually, let me ask it this way. Other than you, who was involved with your show? Was it a one-man band? I mean, was it a one-man
army? Yeah, it was a one-man army. I mean, I had staff from KFI. I had Mike Crozier, who was a great engineer, and Craig Taylor, and I had Jonah Weiland as a producer, and Janice Ngaro was my producer, Mike Schaefer. I had great people. But really, I was the guy captaining the team. And after a while, I did have some writers. After a while, you know, we sort of got rid of the writers because I knew what I was doing. I knew that the show didn't take a lot of writing as in typing. It took writing as in thinking. Okay, here's the concept. Here's what you do. And bang, let's go do it. And the rest of it is improv. So, you know, the first thing that happened to me I would say, I'm just thinking of this. One day I was at Neptune's Net up here at the beach, and a guy starts talking to me and my wife, Maria, about, I don't know, whatever. He's a construction worker. He said, "You listen to the radio?" "Yeah, I love the radio." I said, "Who do you listen to at night?" And this is what you know from research is called unaided recall. He said, "I like Phil Hendry." and I thought, wow, that cat doesn't know who I am, you know, and he doesn't know my wife, but he just said, "I like this guy, Phil Hendry." So I knew that we were having an impact that way. You know, that was important.
Yeah, that's dynamite. I've heard your show. It just was dynamite, really good. And it doesn't seem like it's one guy doing the show. It seems like a whole cast of people. And that was the amazing part of it.
I got a funny story for you. I got to L.A. and I started doing the show, AFTRA, which is our union, called David Hall, my program director, and said, "So you got 8 guys working that show, huh? You're in big trouble." Like, you know, like David wasn't paying. He was trying to skate 8 non-union members past the guy. And David says to me later, says, "I've been thinking clearly. I would have told the guy, go ahead and sue me, you know." But instead, he just told him. He says, "It's one guy doing all those voices." So
amazing! What a career! It's still going strong. Phil Hendry has been our very special guest. Phil, give us a website, a social media site, and also tell us what you're doing. What's the latest? Anything to point out to us? And again, give us the website where people can follow along with what you're doing.
My website is philhendryshow.com, philhendryshow.com. You can go over there and check out our archives. It's a subscription site, which means about $9 a month, about $79 a year.
Well worth it.
Yeah, it really is worth it because we got like 40,000 hours of archive stuff that Frank and I have been talking about. And then I'm on social media. You know, I'm on Facebook, which is Phil Hendry Fans, PHANS, facebook.com/PhilHendryFans. There's also a Phil Hendry BSPs and More page. So we're over there. And then I'm on Twitter, where I do a lot of, I get my political angst out at Real Phil Hendry. We also have Phil Hendry Show. And then all the characters I do have accounts. It's probably too many to give you here. But yeah, once you get to those two Twitter feeds, you'll find out about where the characters are located. And
tremendous.
And also we just did, there's a movie out. It's Zach Galifianakis' movie, Between Two Ferns, which I did an improv scene in it. I'm told that it was about 3 seconds long or something. I think most of the improv scenes, a lot of the actors didn't make it. But I got people recognizing me for that. Yeah. You know, like, I don't even know if it was like 10 seconds of the movie. And the kid at the Shell station's going, "I just saw you in that movie, man. It's fantastic." So you should check that out, too.
Just tremendous. PhilHendryShow.com. Is that right? Phil Hendry.
That's it, brother. You got it.
Yeah. Listen, congratulations on an amazing career and still going strong. And just a unique talent in Phil Hendry. Phil, thanks for being here. And to all
thank
of you,
Frank.
To all of you. Thanks. Yeah. Thanks for listening. And Phil Hendry, everyone, you gotta look him up. Check out his IMDb, but check out his show. He's such a unique talent and has taken such a unique road, in my mind anyway, a unique road to get to where he is. He's a wonderful actor. He's a wonderful voice actor. But before that, he had a radio show that was just, it seemed like there were 8 guys, like he said, like 8 guys running the show. It was him alone. And it just amazes me every time I listen to him. But subscribe. It's $9 a month. It's well worth it. Go to philhendryshow.com and you're going to hear unique skill set from a guy. There's just not a lot of Phil Hendrys out there. I wish there were more, but there are not. But I'm thrilled that we had this one. Phil Hendry, once again, has been our very special guest. Frank McKay signing off. We'll see you all next time on Breaking It Down.